Hi, this is Dr. Diane Hyman, publisher of Natural Nutmeg Magazine, and I have on the line with me today Dr. Anna Resko, who is going to be talking about thyroid dysfunction with us. It's her chapter in our new book that's coming out called Essential Remedies for Women's Health that we expect out in mid-April. And Dr. Resko is a naturopathic physician. She's founded ProNatural Physicians Group in 2011 to address obstacles within the current alternative medicine environment. And ProNatural Physicians Group is a network of naturopathic doctors that serve patients throughout Connecticut. It's a member-based organization that provides administrative support to physicians such as marketing services, public relations, and insurance coding for service reimbursement. As an active leader and spokesperson for naturopathic medicine on a state level, Dr. Resko served the CNPA, Connecticut Naturopathic Physicians Association, for many years. She held the positions of both treasurer and vice president prior to being elected as president in 2006, and she led CNPA until 2010, working hard to promote holistic medicine within the state. She sees daily cases of acute conditions such as sinus infections and strep throat, but she also treats a wide variety of long-term health conditions like digestive problems, allergies, and autoimmune diseases such as thyroid disorders. She believes in a well-rounded team approach to health care and has a chiropractor and acupuncturist on staff, along with two administrative assistants to help create a seamless, organized, and efficient practice for her patients. So, Dr. Resko, welcome today. How are you?
Good. We're doing good.
Good. So your chapter is all about thyroid dysfunction, and it's a really interesting chapter because I think there are so many myths around this particular disorder, and you know, we'll talk a lot about what those are and you know, how you debunk those. But even getting back to just you know, the common symptoms of what thyroid dysfunction is and why it's so difficult to determine if that's what the problem really is. So just elaborate a little bit on that for us, which I know could take hours, but...
Yeah, it actually could, because it really is kind of a... It's a simple yet complicated issue. One of the things that I think is difficult with thyroid diagnosing it is that there's quite a number of symptoms that are associated with thyroid, but on an individual basis, the patient's not necessarily going to have all of those symptoms. So what they might think is related to something else can actually be a thyroid condition, and you really need to figure out what exactly all of the symptoms are. And sometimes people minimize the symptoms themselves. They think they come in, they're like, okay, I'm tired and I'm gaining weight, so it must be a thyroid issue. Then when you start talking to them, they can have a half a dozen more symptoms that have been going on for a long period of time that they never associated with thyroid. So in fact, they do have a thyroid condition, and it's not something that just started. They've had it for a while.
Right.
So I think the other thing is part of the myth thing. Everybody thinks that the patient that you're going to see that has a thyroid condition is in their 40s. We used to have this saying in medical school. It was fatigued, 40, fat, and fertile, and female. So it was all the F's. Yet once I'm in practice, I'm seeing that that really is not the case at all. I see thyroid in a multitude of people, every sex, every age, and every symptom set.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make it hard. Your thyroid does so much for your metabolic part of your system that it can affect pretty much every part of your body, and you might have a symptom that is not even close to what you would associate with a thyroid symptom.
Right, and it also seems like a lot of the symptoms are that there's a strong connection possibly between that and adrenal fatigue syndrome, which is another chapter that we have in the book that Dr. Frank Aida is going to be talking about. But I noticed that the two of your chapters, you actually reference back and forth quite a bit.
Absolutely. And when I do test for a thyroid, if I have a patient who sounds like they might be stressed, they might be in adrenal stress situation as well, because you get the same set of symptoms, because what happens to the adrenal affects the thyroid. So if your adrenal's in trouble, you're going to see thyroid symptoms,
mm-hmm.
along with some other symptoms that might indicate that it's adrenal stress. And adrenal stress is pretty common in our society because stress is the magic word there. Stress is one of the things that really puts your adrenals into trouble. And then it ends up looking like a thyroid issue. But if you don't get to the base of the problem, and it is an adrenal, you're not going to be able to fix the thyroid because it's actually the adrenal that needs to be fixed along with the thyroid.
Right. So do you find that it's one that causes the other more predominantly, like adrenal fatigue will cause thyroid dysfunction or the other way around? Or
usually it's the adrenal that goes to the thyroid. It's
okay.
It doesn't necessarily go the other way, that the thyroid will cause the adrenal
issues. Yeah. Yeah.
Issues.
Can yeah, it I
happen?
Think that's,
yeah, absolutely, but it's just not the more common.
Right. And I think stress is a big issue. I mean, everybody's, you know, pretty much filling the candle at both ends with careers and families and possibly, you know, when you get to, into your 40s, you might actually be caring for older parents, too, in addition to your kids. So it's basically run, and you don't really stop and think about, you know, how exhausted you are until
right.
it's, you know, too late. So,
yeah, they coined a phrase for the caretaking of parents and children that still aren't out of the house, and they call us the sandwich generation.
Right. Yep. So tell us, can you elaborate just a little bit more on what some specific symptoms are? We've mentioned fatigue, obviously, and weight gain, I think. Is there anything else that people should be looking for?
Absolutely. I think that the most common symptoms that I do see are usually in hypothyroid cases, so slower thyroid, and it is the fatigue and the weight gain. Interestingly, when people have hyperthyroid, it seems to take longer for them to figure out that they actually have a thyroid issue, and it's that their thyroid is overproducing and making them hyper. And in cases like that, you'll see some of the same symptoms that you see with hypothyroid. So things like what I call a brain fog, where you just can't remember things from 1 minute to the next. It also affects your digestion, constipation, diarrhea. Your heart, you can feel heart palpitations. That's more likely with the hyper situation. With hypo, you see a lot of patients with low blood pressure. Hair loss, I've seen in both hyper and hypo. Headaches, I've seen in both. Tinnitus, I've seen occasionally, which is the ringing in the ears. That's actually a thyroid symptom. And infertility is a big one. A lot of women have fertility issues, and you have to test their thyroid and make sure that that's not part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it really runs the whole gamut, and as you're mentioning them, I'm thinking to myself, yep, but that could also be adrenal fatigue, or that could be chronic fatigue, or that could be...
Yes.
Right. So it's really a tricky diagnosis, I think.
It is, because it's metabolic. So it's like these are all things that your metabolism has to keep going. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you might not associate having chronic constipation with a thyroid issue because you're thinking, well, my digestion is messed up.
Right.
But if your metabolism is messed up, your digestion is messed up.
Yep. And we also have an interesting chapter on the importance of having a healthy gut, too. And it's so interesting how, like, all these chapters kind of interplay with each other when you really think, you know, certainly they could stand alone. But when you're reading them, you know, in the entirety of the book, it's like, wow, you know, adrenal fatigue affects thyroid dysfunction. It can, you know, one can affect the other. It has to do with the gut, potentially, and, you know, how having an unhealthy gut can lead to some of these symptoms and issues as well. So it's pretty interesting.
It is, and it's in the same sense, it's kind of logical, because when you think about it, everything in your body is connected to everything else. So why wouldn't one symptom indicate a problem that's actually, you know, coursing through several parts of your body? It makes sense
right.
that would happen. And if you're exposing yourself, if you're not eating a really good diet, if you're taking in too many chemicals, if you're not feeding yourself really good nutritious foods, you can absolutely see how logical it would be that other parts of your body would start having problems when they're not getting what they need from your digestive tract.
Right. Well, it's also the whole basis of naturopathic medicine, which is really looking at the patient as a whole instead
absolutely.
Of just specific symptoms. Yeah.
Yep.
So,
I mean,
we
look at one symptom as a red flag that something in the body is going wrong, and then that's where you start digging.
Right. Yep. So let's talk a little bit about what are some of the important testing procedures and which tests might indicate which condition.
Usually with testing, I tend to do more of the blood testing, but there are other tests out there. There's some saliva tests that some of the doctors do. One of the main features of the blood test that I do is that when I look at thyroid, I test the TSH, the T4, and the T3. So I look at the whole process. Your TSH is a stimulating hormone that actually doesn't come from your thyroid. It comes from your pituitary, and it tells your thyroid to make T4, which is considered the inactive thyroid hormone. Then your T4 has to convert into your T3, which does happen some in your thyroid, but it also happens in other parts of your body. So what I want to look at is step after step of what's going on and make sure that the whole process is happening. And you'll find that what a lot of the medical doctors do is they look at the TSH and the TSH and T4 and make a deduction from there, because it's what the thyroid is working mostly with. But I like to see if everything's playing nice with all of the hormones, not just is your thyroid producing what it should be producing. Mm-hmm. And I do find in a lot of cases that the thyroid's doing everything that it needs to, up to the point where it has to convert that product of T4 into T3, and that's where the patient is having fatigue and not having, having a lot of the thyroid symptoms.
Right.
And then again, I'll also test the adrenals. Usually I'll test blood levels of cortisol to see if the adrenals are having a problem.
Right.
Some patients will do a basal body temperature testing, which when they get up in the morning, they test their body temperature right away. And if it's 97 or below or pretty consistently, it can be an indication that the thyroid is having problems.
Okay. And are there certain tests that indicate certain conditions?
There are other tests that will indicate other conditions, such as thyroid antibodies will tell you that the patient actually has Hashimoto's, which is the body's, it's considered an autoimmune disease, the body's attacking the thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
It can also indicate, Hashimoto's also can just be an infection. Sometimes we'll just treat it as if it's an infection and the problem resolves, but you do want to reverse that process where the system thinks it needs to make antibodies for your thyroid. So it is a reversible situation in a lot of cases. You just have to treat it as soon as you find it.
Right, yep. And that was actually one of the myths, I think, you talked about, that people think it's irreversible.
Hashimoto's, Graves, just thyroid in general, patients will be put on thyroid medication and that's it. They, one test, your thyroid's low, you're on the medication. And that's not necessarily the case. It really is something that is with any other bodily function. Something can be on a downswing and you bring it back up and see if you can get it to do what it's supposed to be doing, and you don't need the medication anymore.
Right. Well, our body has such an amazing ability to heal. It doesn't make sense with most disorders that you should be able to reverse them as long as you get on, by changing your lifestyle, and maybe you do have to take medication for some time and taking certain supplements and whatnot, but it seems like that makes perfect sense. It's not like you should be on something, unless you've had your thyroid surgically removed, like, and you did talk
right.
A little bit about that too.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. The body can do some amazing things, but you have to help it along sometimes.
Right. So what other common myths that you hear a lot that you just want to kind of debunk now? We talked about sort of the fact that it's not just necessarily a women's, woman in their 40s overweight disease, but anything else that...
Right, or that it's a condition that you're going to have for the rest of your life once you have that problem.
Right.
I think some of the other myths are based on symptoms. A lot of people will think that they don't have a thyroid issue because they don't have a goiter, which is the enlargement in the throat. And that's really not true. Goiter indicates a thyroid problem, but it doesn't mean you don't have one if you don't have a goiter. In the eyes also, there's a symptom where you look at a person and their eyes are bulging. That's another one, like the goiter, where people think they might not have a thyroid condition because they don't have that symptom, and that's really not true. And I think the weight gain is a big one, because people, as soon as they start gaining weight, they think that they have a thyroid problem. and they're not looking at the whole picture. And as we age, our metabolism slows down. If you're not addressing it and looking at what your activity level is, what you're, you know, what you're eating, the whole picture of what you're doing with your health, just gaining weight doesn't mean that you have a thyroid issue.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a symptom of it, but you really need to look at the big picture and see if it's other things that you're doing in your lifestyle that's causing the weight gain.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think people probably want to blame it on something.
Exactly.
other than having to change their lifestyle.
Exactly. If I could take a pill and make this little extra weight go away, it would be magical, and it just doesn't really work that way.
Unfortunately.
From a thyroid issue, fixing your thyroid doesn't actually just dissolve the fat either. You still have to work at losing the weight.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, it's probably something that's, you know, going on in your lifestyle that we were talking about earlier, whether it's you're overstressed or depending on what you're eating or whatnot, that has gotten you to this position in the first place. So, theoretically,
you know,
you're not going to be able to just take a pill or, you know, once you fix the thyroid issue, it's not going to revert automatically back to, you know, immediate weight loss.
It's
going to have to make changes, so...
And there's a big business out there. Everybody thinks they've got the magic pill that's going to help you lose weight without doing the work.
Yep. That is very true. So what do you recommend? I mean, we've touched a little bit on making lifestyle changes. So specifically related to nutrition, what are your recommendations for thyroid patients?
It's pretty much the same as what I suggest to all of my patients. You really want to do organic, get away from the chemicals, get the, you know, stuff away from your system that can be disrupting to your metabolism. And whole foods, the same thing that you hear from everybody that talks about health these days, the fruits, the vegetables, nuts, seeds. Proteins, fish, chicken, some red meat if that's something that you like. We really have to get away from the processed foods. I think the processed foods in our environment are wreaking havoc on everybody's health, and that really does have to be eliminated. There's a few things that in the whole foods, broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, that have been associated with thyroid, like dysregulating thyroid hormones. But the fact is that if you cook these foods, first of all, you'd have to eat a ton of them in order for that to actually become an issue. But if you cook them even just a little bit, it eliminates that process so that they're not a problem. And I've seen some things on soy as well having an effect on thyroid hormones. But again, you would have to consume a lot of soy in order for something to be that disruptive. And
When you think about it now, though, like, soy is in so many packaged and processed things. And I think that might be just the problem where some people might be having just extreme levels of it. I mean, it's just even in, like, salad dressings and things that you would condiment, you know, that people are using all the time and not even really thinking about what the ingredients are.
Absolutely, and it's the same thing with the wheat and the dairy. You do not realize how much you're consuming until you start reading the labels and see what's in the food that you're eating. And when people start reading the labels and they're seeing all this stuff and they don't even know what it is or how to pronounce it, it really kind of makes you take a step back and say, is the processed food really something that I'm even getting nutrients from? Or am I eating just a bunch of stuff that's not helping me, not helping my health, and you're over-consuming it because it's not in just that one packaged food that you're eating. It's in almost every packaged food.
Right. I like to tell people to just shop the perimeter in the grocery store because basically that's where all the food is that you should be eating anyway. Like, don't go down any of the middle aisles.
Right, exactly. It's got to be refrigerated. It's got a shorter lifespan, so it's probably pretty natural.
Right.
And it's interesting because people will come in and they're so excited that they're gluten-free because now they're eating some kind of bread that has no gluten or gladden in it. And I keep trying to explain to them, you're still eating a processed food. It's still bread. It's still been completely altered from its original state. So it may not have gluten or gladden, but it's still not as nutrition-oriented as eating some fruit and some vegetables and, you know, some whole foods.
Right, yep. I think it's just so confusing for people. I mean, like, even if you go into Whole Foods, you think that you can pretty much go into a store like that and buy anything and you're fine. And, you know, you're really not, because even Whole Foods stocks some stuff on their shelves that I think is questionable as far as, like, their, you know, boxed and packaged stuff and even in their frozen food section. So it's really a learning curve, I think, of figuring out. It seems like it should be simple, you know, like, basically just, you know, if you can pick it off a tree or pull it out of the ground, you know, or it's an animal or whatever, if you're not vegan or vegetarian, then it's fine. But it's not when you think about, well, has it been sprayed with a pesticide, or, you know, in terms of, like, fish, is it farm-raised, or, you know, and then with other kinds of meats, are there antibiotics or growth hormone? I mean, it's a lot of information for people to understand, I think.
It is. It's an incredible amount of information, and our food system has changed so rapidly that people haven't had a time to, I call it, we haven't evolved for junk food yet, and people haven't figured out what exactly the junk food is. The fish is a great example. Everybody started realizing how good salmon was for you, so now, you know, everybody wants salmon. They're all eating salmon. And within a short period of time, they're making farmed salmon. The salmon is so not nutrient-rich that they have to actually put the salmon color in it before they put it in the store, so that it's the color of natural salmon.
Well, and even if you are really, I think, if you really notice, if you're observant, I think it looks different still. And you can tell the difference between a piece of wild Alaskan salmon and something that's farm-raised.
Absolutely.
Same
is true. If you learn the codes at the grocery stores with the produce, you can tell by the codes on the labels on the fruits and vegetables which ones are organic and which ones are not.
Even if they don't say it, how do you know that difference?
Right. There's codes, the code on the produce, if it has a 9 in front of a 4-digit code, it's organic.
Okay.
And I know even the grocery store people don't know that, because I've picked up things that had an organic sign over top of them, and it had just a 4-digit code with no 9 in front of it. So I knew it wasn't organic.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to know, actually. So you're looking for the number 9 in front of the 4-digit, the rest of the 4-digit PLU code.
Right.
Okay. That's good. That's good. I mean, I guess the other safer way to do it might be to just shop at a farm. You know, especially like in spring, summer, fall, when we have, obviously, in New England in the winter, you're not going to be shopping at many farms.
Right.
But,
and the farmers, you know, markets. And I like the farmers markets better, because you can actually, the person who is involved with the farm usually is right there, so that you can ask them questions. So, for instance, this summer we have a farmers market in Berlin on Saturdays. And one of the farmers had corn, but it didn't have any signs on it, so I went up and asked him if it was genetically modified, and he assured me that it was not genetically modified. Getting an organic registration to get registered or certified organic is not an easy process, so a lot of farmers, even though they don't put anything on their fruits and vegetables, they don't have the certified organic. And it's good if you can just talk to them and say, okay, you know, what do you put on this? And, you know, they're pretty honest. I've gone to another one and asked him what was on the peaches, and he told me, and it was not organic, but there was no sign that said it was organic either, but he told me exactly what was sprayed on the peaches.
Right. Yeah. So that, you know, that might be better choices for people. Plus, I like it because it's more sustainable. It helps out our farmers. And
it's fresh. They don't have to
pick
it before it's ripe.
Right, you're not getting strawberries from Mexico or California.
Exactly. They're not green when they put them on the truck and change color by the time they get across the continent.
Right, exactly. So we talked a lot about nutrition. What kinds of supplements do you recommend for thyroid patients?
There's some very specific supplements that are involved in treating the thyroid, and one of them would very logically be iodine, because that does the iodine. The only place in the body you use iodine is in your thyroid. So if you do have, a lack of iodine, it's definitely going to lead to a thyroid condition. That's one of the supplements that I'll use. The other supplement that I frequently use is one that has a combination of all of the things that help your thyroid function well, so that you're not doing a hit or miss type thing, because all of your vitamins, your A's, your B's, C's, E's, amino acids, they're all involved, because it's a metabolic process. So if any of that is missing, you can have a problem. There's some botanicals that are very good for treating thyroid conditions. Lemon balm, bugleweed, motherwort, passion flower. Those are for a hyperthyroid, a hypothyroid. I use a product called Bladderwrack, a herb called Bladderwrack kelp, which also has iodine in it. Glyceriza, some stinging nettle. And generally, I'll use a combination of those depending on what I see in the patient that I know they need support with. Mm-hmm. I also use homeopathy, which is very specific to the patient.
Right, right. And again, like we were talking before about medications, are these things that you recommend people have to stay on long-term, or is it more of a short-term thing or cycling?
No, they're very much, they're tools to get your thyroid to begin functioning correctly. I do have some patients, more with the hyperthyroid, I find that they're on the tinctures for quite a while. It takes a while for some reason for the hyperthyroid to correct itself more than the hypothyroid patients. But they'll stay on them. And for a while, I mean a year, maybe a year and a half, before they find that they can not take the supplement, the botanical, and their thyroid is fine.
Right. Yeah. That's not long. I mean, I think, you know, when you think about some other situations like gut dysfunction and whatnot, sometimes it's 2 years or more that people have to stay on a supplement regime and, you know, to really heal that. So
yeah, I suggest to people that if they've had a problem, they need to look back at when the problem actually started and then kind of figure for every year that you've had the issue, you're going to be at least a month in correcting it. With the thyroid, that's kind of tricky because there could be symptoms they were having for 3 years that they didn't associate with thyroid. And
right.
Then when the symptoms worsened, they think they only had thyroid for a year when, in fact, you know, it was a much longer time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So what other alternative treatments do you recommend besides diet and supplementation?
In you know, worst-case scenarios, patients might need to use the pharmaceuticals, which is the Synthroid and the levothyroxine, are T4. So that's just one of the thyroid hormones. Your system still has to convert that into T3, which is your active one. So you will see patients with a prescription for Synthroid that they just keep going up and up and nothing changes, and it's because it's not that they're lacking T4. It's that it's not converting into T3.
Mm-hmm.
There's a T3 pharmaceutical on the market, but I have not seen very many people that did well on it. It's called Cytomel. Couple patients, no problem. For the most part, I've seen, you know, patients have ended up in my office because they were finally put on Cytomel and didn't do well on it. The pharmaceutical that I try and get patients to find someone to prescribe is Armour Thyroid. And Armour Thyroid is a derivative of, it's a derivative of a pig's thyroid. So it does have the thyroid hormones in it from the animal because it's a piece of that gland. It's called a glandular. We use a lot of glandulars in naturopathic medicine. But it's not an easy prescription to get. A lot of the doctors don't like prescribing it. It's a little harder for the regulation of it for the patient, and I think one of the reasons for that is it's a naturally derived glandular, and I think people's thyroid starts responding to it, and they don't need it as much anymore, so you have to constantly change the prescription because they start getting better.
Right. So, yeah, it really has to be followed closely.
Yeah,
I know that was one of the myths that you had talked about. People had apparently been asking if it was going off the market or what the problem was. I've definitely heard that there's a lot of speculation around it, but I think
there is, and I think that part of it is because the medical doctors don't like to prescribe it. But something happened a while ago, and I'm not sure exactly, but it did become difficult to get. And it was a lot of doctors seem to not look into it any further than that, and were telling people for quite a while that it just wasn't available when, in fact, it was available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just triggered me. I wanted to ask you about something else. We've talked before about iodine, and that's something I wanted to touch on because I think there's a lot of confusion about where, what kind of iodine and where to get it, because you certainly, like certain things like sea salt are not good sources, which I think people might be confused about. So let's just talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, the confusion with the sea salt, there is a minuscule amount of iodine in the sea salt, and actually there's iodine in the sea vegetables. So when you're eating sushi and it has that little piece of sea vegetable wrapped around it, that has tons of minerals and iodine and everything in it. The reason that it's in your regular salt from the grocery store is because it's put in there. So it's not a naturally occurring in a big dose in those salts either. It's just that it's added to those salts.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're taking iodine as a supplement, you need to look for the iodine that is used for supplementation. The supplement companies have liquid iodines that you can take as a supplement. It's not the same iodine that you get at the pharmacy a long time ago. People used to use it on cuts. And,
right.
The orange that you get.
Right.
You can put the orange on your skin. It's pretty interesting. Sometimes if you put the orange iodine on your skin and you see how quickly your system soaks that iodine in through your skin, it can give you a clue if you're deficient in iodine. But it's not the iodine you want to take to supplement an iodine deficiency. That's just kind of a fun little test to do to see if you are deficient.
Mm-hmm. So you can actually get that, I'm not sure what you call it, but it's some seaweed-type thing that, it's the black that goes around the sushi that you're referring to, right? It's sort
yeah,
of like,
yeah.
The rubbery
and kelp is one of them.
Yeah.
There's a number of them. You can get them in dried leaves at the health food stores and
okay.
Throw them in sauces. Put them in sauces, put them in soups, whatever, and they're like vegetables. They'll just, if you put them in a soup, it just dissolves into the soup, and your soup will have iodine in it.
Right, right. What about, like, seaweed salad?
Yep, seaweed salad's okay. Great. Anything that comes from the ocean is going to have tons of minerals, and iodine is in there as well.
Yep, okay. That's good. Any other alternative treatments? We haven't talked much about like exercise or stress reduction or anything like that you would recommend?
Well, you're always going to talk about exercise because as people start getting their energy back, if fatigue is one of the symptoms that they're having with their thyroid, I definitely start encouraging them to even just start with 15 minutes a day. Start walking, start moving more, start really pushing your body and your metabolism to kick back in and start doing all of the things that it's supposed to be doing. So exercise is definitely on the menu of how to get your thyroid going again. The other problem that people run into with the thyroid issue is the lack of energy during the day, and then they can't sleep at night. So you want them to exercise and start getting that circadian rhythm clicked back in so that they're energized during the day, and then they've used enough energy that at nighttime they're going to go to sleep. They're not going to lay there and stare at the ceiling all night, which is another health issue if you're not getting a good night's sleep. Sometimes acupuncture will work. Patients will try to acupuncture if that's something that they like to do. And stress reduction pretty much covers the gamut of health conditions. You have to reduce your stress. One of the ways to reduce your stress, exercise. Make sure you're
right.
Getting good sleep. Healthy lifestyle.
Yep. I think also, a lot of times, some people might take exercise to an extreme and get into an overtraining condition. I know there's certain cases where people are actually doing too much intense exercise that's not helping some of these disorders, and they really might benefit from, doing less of that and maybe incorporating some other types of things like yoga or Tai Chi, even meditation. So.
Yeah, I think there's people out there that always will take things to an extreme in pretty much every manner. I mean, there's people out there, if you tell them that a certain supplement is going to help them, next thing you know they're eating bottles of supplements because they think that's what's going to help them. And it's just some information. And, you know, Dr. Oz is an information overload. I have people come in, they've bought every supplement that he ever suggested because they think they have whatever it is he's, you know, talking about on TV. But they kind of miss the whole message. I mean, Dr. Oz is definitely about healthy lifestyle. Get your sleep, eat good food, exercise, but everything in moderation. You know, anything that you're going to overdo is going to become a problem sooner or later.
Yeah, so maybe if they moderated their TV watching, that wouldn't be so much of a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Moderate your Dr. Oz exposure.
Yeah, exactly. Only watch him once a week. So tell us a little bit about your practice and ProNatural Physicians Group. I know, you know, we've talked a lot about thyroid dysfunction, but there's a lot of other things that you treat. And if you want to talk a little bit about the group that you started, that would be great, too.
Yeah, my practice is Kensington Naturopathic Medical Center, and I'm right in the middle of the state of Connecticut. And I've been practicing for a while, and I realized that one of the problems that the naturopaths and the general public have is getting together. Patients aren't aware of naturopathic doctors and that there are alternatives out there to medical treatments, that there are doctors out there who can help people with their lifestyle, help people determine exactly what's wrong so that they can fix it and not end up on a thyroid medication, for instance, the rest of their life. So I created ProNatural Physicians Group to get naturopaths together so that we could be more visible to patients, we could do more marketing and just help people find naturopaths more easily. So we have a naturopaths around the state, and if you go to the website, there's a Find an ND feature on there, and it'll tell you where the doctors are that are in the group. We do marketing. We do all kinds of stuff just so that patients can find us more easily. And education, the biggest part of naturopathic medicine today is educating the public so that they recognize that there are other alternatives, that they should be seeking the cause of their illness and seeking other options, acupuncture, naturopathic medicine, botanicals, homeopathy. The naturopathic physicians have so many tools that they can use to help patients with. So it's not just, you know, if you have this, you take this. You look at the whole patient and you figure out what's causing the problem, and then you correct what's causing the problem so that the symptoms are all taken care of. Instead of just taking one thing to solve one symptom.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a website.
Yep.
Our website is pronaturalphysiciansgroup.com. And anybody can access it. And there's lots of information out there, naturopathic medicine, the doctors, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a great, organization that you've started for naturopathic physicians, because it's really hard for them to, when you think about it, basically, for any doctor, really, you're not really taught business skills in naturopathic school or medical school. It's, you know, and I don't know that you necessarily should be, because really your skill set is more on healing patients. It's not necessarily becoming a business owner, but at the same time, you are a business owner, and so it's difficult for, you know, you to be a one-man show and have to, you know, manage all of that. So I think it's great that there's a community, you know, that you're building out there to help people with, you know, sort of all the back-end aspects of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I basically just stole a page from the medical doctor's playbook, because this is what the medical doctors do. You don't really see that many individual medical practitioners anymore. They're in groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're in bigger, more visible groups. Here, we've had Grove Hill Clinic in town for years and years, and it's Kensington Medical Center. I mean, these doctors all get together in groups, or they work for the hospital, or they work for each other, and it's much, you get much bigger visibility to the general public when there's more than just one doctor in a location doing a minimal amount of marketing, because marketing it's hard, it's expensive, it's time consuming. So it's easier if you've got a group of doctors doing it together.
Right. And so your focus for this chapter and a lot of what you see in your practice is thyroid dysfunction. You basically treat any and all conditions. Is there anything, you know, specifically that you see patients coming to you for? Or?
I do a lot of autoimmune disease, and it's interesting because we will often say that once you start practicing, your practice comes to you, and I'd say that's very true in my practice. I ended up, not that I chose thyroid and autoimmune conditions, but I do have kind of a passion for them, and I see a lot of autoimmune patients, I see a lot of thyroid patients, and I see a lot of other just general medical type conditions through my practice. I do have some other doctors that practice here. I have Dr. Saltpaw, and we have him working on cardiology and men's medicine, which, again, I think it's just something that has come to him. He did want to do cardiology, and, you know, cardiology does tend to be a big men's medical problem, mostly because that's when they finally find a doctor, is when it's something wrong with their heart. Mm-hmm. And we have the acupuncturist who we share patients with, and I have an upper cervical chiropractic. He specializes in the upper cervical, the atlas and the axis, which is a really interesting chiropractic specialty. There's not a lot of chiropractors that do it, but when you think about it, those two vertebrae are so important to your the functions of your body, because they're the first ones that come out at the base of your skull that your spinal cord passes through.
Right. Yeah. I just want to confirm the website. Is it pronaturalphysicians.com or pronaturalphysicians group, or you can get there either way?
Actually, I think both of them are out there, but Pronatural Physicians is less keystroke.
Okay. Okay. Okay, great. Yeah, it's a great website. Definitely for patients too, to just learn more about naturopathic medicine and finding a doctor for sure.
Yep.
So, great. Well, I want to thank you for all your time today on the call. And if anybody wants to learn more or has any questions, they can visit you at pronaturalphysicians.com. And the book will be out mid-April. We'll have all that information up on our website, and you can contact individual practitioners to purchase it. And hopefully you will listen in on another one of our calls. But thank you again for your time, Anne.
Okay,
thank you.
Have
a great day. Okay.
You too.
Bye-bye.